Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
You know what? It would take hell and high water. Children standing there stranded outside of school, waiting for me to pick them up. That is not going to happen. All right? So it was a big clue when QC, Qui Chadwick, leaves her children standing there stranded outside of school. That should have been a red flag to everybody then. Let me just go ahead and tell you. She's dead. And for 4 years, the prime suspect has been nowhere to be found, although his image was everywhere. It's amazing how a lot of money can buy you a whole new life. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. Thank you for being with us. I don't like crimes on women, on mothers. How awful to steal a mother away from her children. That will affect them forever. In the last hours, a major, major break in the case of the murder of QC Qui Chadwick. Take a listen to our friends at Inside Edition.
Busted. A fugitive multimillionaire accused of killing his wife, nabbed after nearly 5 years on the run.
You can run, but you can't hide.
Peter Chadwick made a fortune in real estate. In 2012, he and his wife, QC, vanished from their $2 million home in Newport Beach, California. The next day, Chadwick called 911 from a gas station near the Mexican border with a hard-to-believe kidnapping tale. Detectives were suspicious from the start. One big reason, Chadwick couldn't explain the cuts on his arm and neck. 1 week later, his wife's body was found in a dumpster. She'd been strangled. Chadwick was charged with murder. He was released on $1 million bond, and then he was gone. For nearly 5 years, it was a mystery. What happened to the accused wife killer? An international manhunt was launched. Chadwick was added to the U.S. Marshals' most wanted list. The 54-year-old tycoon was returned to the U.S. from Mexico after authorities received a crucial tip. Cops say his time on the run was a far cry from his ritzy California lifestyle.
He turned to more modest accommodations in motels and hostels. Peter also worked a number of odd jobs to supplement the cash that he had brought with him.
Police say Chadwick also used a string of aliases.
After 4 years outsmarting the cops, multi-millionaire real estate investor husband Peter Chadwick has been found. But how in the world did we end up on this wild goose chase?
My wife's dead.
Okay, so where exactly is she?
They took her.
Who took her?
The guy broke into my house. He drove me here. He had a friend. They're just gone. They've gone in a pickup truck.
Okay, so your wife's dead.
She's dead.
They killed her.
Yesterday.
They killed her yesterday.
Yeah, we've been driving in Newport Beach.
Okay. Hold on. Let me get my supervisor on
the phone. Okay, you're hearing one of the most bizarre 911 calls I have ever heard, and that's a lot of 911 calls. Let's hear the rest of that 911 call.
He said that his wife is dead, but someone broke into the house and stole and took her.
Yeah,
Who is he?
Juan.
How do you know Juan?
I picked him up to look at some painting work at the house. I brought him to the house.
And when did this happen?
Yesterday, middle of the day.
Yesterday in the middle of the day? When did she die?
Yesterday, middle of the day.
Okay, and where is she now?
Like 11. They have her body. They said they're going to cut her up.
Who has her body?
Juan and Chi.
Okay, so when she died at 11 o'clock, they took her?
Yeah. They maybe put her in the car.
How do you know she's dead?
She drowned.
What?
Her body was stiff, even. I've been driving with them. They say they're going to cut her up.
What's your name?
Peter Chadwick.
Wow. Peter Chadwick calling 911. A multi-millionaire married 21 years to his sweetheart, his college sweetheart. And now these 911 calls. Straight out to Wendy Patrick joining me, California prosecutor, author of Red Flags on Amazon. Sounds like he doesn't know the time or the date his wife was murdered, and that he hired these two guys he's referring to as Juan and Che, and somehow they've taken his wife's body. How did that happen? I got a lot of problems with the 911 call, Wendy Patrick.
Oh, yeah. And that 911 operator is asking a lot of great cross-examination questions. You talk about a picture being worth a thousand words and a video is even more priceless. Sometimes you can even hear in somebody's voice what they are thinking, what they're feeling, and the credibility and all the rest of it. This is one of the reasons we have to hear these types of 911 calls instead of just having somebody recite what somebody said on the phone. Everything about the voice intonation, the hesitation, the lack of what you might expect somebody to be feeling after just witnessing the death of a spouse after all of those years, that is one of the things that makes this type of a call so valuable for a jury.
Okay, well, put on your seatbelts. Here's some more.
Mm-hmm. Are you on any kind of medication, sir?
Not heavy ones.
Okay.
It's not bad.
Okay.
Because I think they're going, they might be going to Mexico or somewhere.
Okay, but this happened yesterday at 11. You're now calling us at 5:30 in the morning.
I know. I want you to get him.
Hello?
Yeah. They're here.
Okay, go talk to him.
Okay, thank goodness the cops got there. So how many hours passed? Joining me, an all-star panel, Dave Mack, syndicated talk show host, detective at StephenLampley.com. Stephen Lampley, renowned psychologist, KarenStark.com, joining us from Manhattan. Retired chief medical examiner, Dr. Chris Sperry, and California prosecutor, author of Red Flags on Amazon, Wendy Patrick. Dave Mack, let me just start with the facts. What happened that we know of? Who's dead? Where did the incident occur? Who is Juan and Che? And who's this guy calling 911?
All right. The guy on the phone with 911 is Peter Chadwick. He and his wife, QC, were married for almost 21 years. They were college sweethearts and they had three children. One child was away at boarding school. The other two came home from school and were at the bus stop and nobody picked them up.
Okay, wait, right there. Hold on. I heard you say children come home from school waiting at the bus stop and nobody shows up. Listen.
So these boys got out of school and what happened?
So they get out of school and a bus drops them off at a bus stop near their house in Newport.
Sergeant Ryan Peters remembers that day.
And a neighbor saw him sitting at the bus stop past the time that they typically get picked up by either Peter or QC. So she stopped and asked, "Have you reached your mom and dad?" And they said no. They haven't been able to reach them. They were calling them. Nobody was answering.
But that's not all. What about the scene of the crime?
Investigators combed the Chadwick home for clues.
And then when they go upstairs and they walk into the master bath, that's when patrol realizes there's more to the story.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Welcome back. In the last hours, a stunning twist in the search for multimillionaire Peter Chadwick, long suspected of strangling his beautiful young wife, the mother of his children.
From what they've already told us, they got a tip that led them to Mexico, where Chadwick was living. He was arrested Sunday, and he had numerous fake IDs on him.
Peter Chadwick returned to California Monday in handcuffs and shackled at the waist after more than 4 years on the run. Authorities allege the father of three strangled his wife, QC, in their Newport Beach home in October 2012 before placing her body in a dumpster in San Diego County. Karen Thorpe was QC's close friend. We showed her the images of Chadwick in custody.
What's it like to see that?
I'm angry. I'm repulsed. I want to make him know the pain that everybody else suffered.
Our friends at CBS. 4 years on the run. How did he do it, Dave Mack?
You know, Nancy, it's interesting. It's not like he went on the lam, left the United States of America and went to Mexico and, you know, bought a house and just stayed put. This is a guy who went to Mexico, and police believe that he spent his entire time there, that he started off by staying in very expensive luxury resorts, but he didn't have proper identification. And, you know, in many places, they do require some type of identification of who you are and where you're from. And so after the cash bought him clearance for a certain amount of time, he would have to either, you know, give up the actual identification they asked for or leave. Well, he just kept leaving. So he moved around a lot and stayed at a number of luxury resorts. And then he started staying at more moderate places. And eventually, when he was caught, he was staying in a residential community in a duplex. And again, we know that he used a lot of different IDs and a lot of different names. And during that 4 years on the run, he was always looking over his shoulder and constantly on the move. So starting off at luxury resorts and slowly moving down to more moderate accommodations and then eventually into a residential community of duplexes.
Peter Chadwick, long suspected of strangling his beautiful young wife, the mother of his children. But how did we land here today? What about the scene of the crime?
In the master bathroom, they initially saw the broken glass, decorative glass that was around the bathroom tub, the edging.
We had blood at the bottom of the bathtub. As you continue through the downstairs, the safe is clearly ajar.
So it's starting to look like more than just a welfare check situation.
Yeah, obviously whoever left in haste. It looked quite suspicious.
Okay, everything about the scene is very disturbing. We find out that there was broken glass, there was blood, a safe was open. A big problem for me is that nobody was tipped off, Stephen Lampley, detective at StephenLampley.com, until the little boys were stranded at the bus stop. Nobody ever picked them up. And that is how they find out that things have gone sideways. I mean, according to this guy, this millionaire realtor, he's been in the car with these two men who he hired to paint as painters, Juan and Che, for many, many hours. Why are we just hearing about the wife being dead?
But Nancy, he doesn't have his story straight. And the lackadaisical tone on the 911 call, even actually, Nancy, sounds like he's making the story up as he goes. And of course, I don't know that to be fact, but that was my impression. This story seems like something that was just crudely made up from the get-go.
Listen.
What's more, Chadwick's own body had some incriminating injuries.
He had scratches on his neck and arms. He had a bite mark on his forearm.
To Dr. Chris Berry, retired chief medical examiner. Dr. Chris Berry, when I see scratches on arms and neck, that screams out one thing, Chris.
Yes, he did it himself. And I've seen the photographs, and those are, we call factitious, meaning that they're he did this to himself to try to make it look like he was attacked. But those do not have any of the features that I would associate with someone attacking someone else. They're very superficial. They look like they were done with either the point of a knife or even the edge of the knife just, you know, scraping the skin.
How can you tell this was self-inflicted versus possibly the wife, QC, doing it to him?
Well, you have to look at the injuries to start with. Most often, facial injuries are going to come from fingernails. That is someone grabbing the face and scraping the face. And those leave very distinctive marks behind, little semicircular or slightly curved abrasions from the fingernail edge or broad scrapes from the fingernails themselves. These are actually cuts. They're incised wounds, meaning they came from the sharp edge of something. And also, all of them are very superficial. They're, your child falling on the driveway and scraping his knee is going to get deeper injury in his knee than what those injuries are on his face. And that they're typically done, for dramatic effect, but also, something like this it's done without understanding that experts could look at injuries like this and really tell how they are made, what kind of instrument, whether it's a knife or fingernails. And these just don't add up. They look like they were self-inflicted to me.
Well, he claims that these two, Juan and Shay, had taken him on a long, long car ride with his wife's body in the car. But take a listen to what technology uncovers.
Peter stated that he had been driving with Juan from Anaheim to Newport Coast. During that trip, he was stopped by a police officer who told him to move along from the side of the road. We were able to contact that police officer, who remembered the stop, had recorded the license plate, and remembered telling Peter to move along. He also remembered that for sure Peter was the only person in the vehicle. Juan or anyone else, there was no one else inside that vehicle. And for us, that was the first open and shut lie that he had told us that I was sure about.
They tried to confirm everything that he was saying, and at point by point, every aspect of it, where they were able to locate a video camera, or they were able to find a cell phone record, or in this case, interview a California Highway Patrol officer, they contacted him, his story kept falling apart.
Wow. Okay, explain to me, Stephen Lampley, detective, you can find him at StephenLampley.com, how technology is used to destroy his story, that these two guys had him on the run, essentially, and him, I guess, as a hostage with his wife's dead body in the car.
Yeah, and the technology's come a long way, even since when I first started as a police officer in the late 80s. DNA, I mean, the technology and the forensics has just has blown open investigations to a new level.
You know, with the tolls that you pass, you can retrieve the video. There is a camera on you when you go through a toll, even if you've got Easy Pass. There are tag grabbers on the side of the road that can grab your license tags. There are cameras everywhere. If you're like me, I couldn't care less if a camera catches me zooming by on my minivan. But for people that have a dead body in the trunk, it's a whole nother can of worms. And there's one other problem, a suitcase.
And then there was this. A packed suitcase in Chadwick's car.
Our friends at CBS.
We had a suitcase, all male clothing inside, that was just kind of thrown in there as if somebody kind of packed hastily.
I'm sorry, there was a bag in the car of men's clothes? What kind of kidnapper says, hey, go ahead and pack yourself an overnight bag?
Which is part of the problem. That's not normally the thing that happens. No.
During the initial contact, Peter was kind of all over the map. His story was very disjointed. He'd go through the range of emotions, crying. However, the officer never saw a tear, to moments of anxiety and just complete quiet. And the most interesting thing was during the entire contact with law enforcement and with our detectives, he never once asked about his kids.
He never asked about the boys?
No.
And we're talking, he hasn't seen them since the morning prior when he dropped him off for school.
What did that say to you?
To me, it means that he's more concerned with his story, creating an alibi.
Than he is about his own sons.
It appeared so, yes.
To all you moms and dads out there listening, if you're like me, you pour all your love, all your dreams, all your hopes, all your energy, all your money, all your everything into your children. Can you imagine you go out of town for just a couple of days and you get a call, your baby's missing? I cannot even think about it, but that is what happened to Michael Stern. He gets a call that his only child, his beautiful girl, Sarah Stern, is missing, and her car has been found abandoned on a remote bridge. At first, they tell him they think she committed suicide. He's like, no way. She didn't do that. That couldn't happen. What happened to Sarah Stern? When you see her picture, you're going to flip. Bubbly, vivacious, aspiring artist, had lived through losing her mother to cancer and fought back. this Saturday at a special new time on Oxygen, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central. What happened to Sarah Stern? Injustice with Nancy Grace. Please join me. Thank you, friend. I'll see you Saturday, 9 o'clock Eastern, a brand new time. Injustice with Nancy Grace.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Joining us, a major break in the case and the murder of a beautiful young mom, QC Chadwick.
A millionaire accused of killing his wife is expected in court in California today after more than 4 years on the run. We told you yesterday about Peter Chadwick. He vanished after he was charged with murder, but was caught in Mexico Sunday. Well, today, prosecutors will ask a judge to deny bail.
Our friends at CBS. How in the world did this guy stay on the lam?
We believe that Peter Chadwick has been in Mexico since his disappearance.
Law enforcement says Peter Chadwick used aliases and fake IDs to live off the grid for more than 4 years. The 55-year-old vanished in 2015 after being charged with murdering his wife, QC, in their Newport Beach home while their children were at school. At a news conference Tuesday, authorities said Chadwick tried throwing off investigators.
Chadwick strategically placed indicators that he was headed to Canada at his father's residence.
They say he was actually hiding out in Mexico, first at high-end resorts, then at motels and hostels, working odd jobs to make money, even though he fled with nearly $1 million in cash.
He went from a real estate millionaire to bussing tables.
Right, I think he was just desperate to fit in and stay on the run.
So this is where he stopped. Officials say intense coverage by media, including 48 Hours, put pressure on Chadwick.
The media coverage made him trip up.
I believe so, yeah. I think that caused an incredible amount of stress in his life.
Dave Mack, weigh in.
Big question, Nancy, of why was this guy given bail? You know, the heinous crime, killing his wife of 17 years, the mother of his three boys. And the answer for that was that his attorneys and the judge all believed that he not only had the close ties to the community that they look for, but that he had a real affection for his sons. Well, think about this for a minute. When he killed his wife, okay, it was a Wednesday afternoon, and the two younger boys, 9 and 12, they get off their school bus where they're normally picked up at this bus stop on the way home from school. Mom is usually there to pick them up. And Chadwick, well, he's gone. We don't know exactly where he went, but we know that he had killed his wife and they were nowhere to be found. So his affection for his children, he didn't care that they were at a bus stop all by themselves. He didn't care that they had to find their own way home. He didn't care that they didn't have a key to get inside their house. A neighbor picked them up at the bus stop and took them to the house. When they couldn't get in and couldn't get anybody on the phone, she then takes them, the boys, to her house, feeds them dinner, then goes back to their house again where can't find mom and dad, can't get them on the phone. That's when that was like 7 o'clock at night. She's the one who called the police. So this man who cared so much about his kids, never once, you know, worried about or concerned about what was going to happen when they got off the school bus, couldn't get into the house. As a matter of fact, all the way through till the next morning when he makes that crazy 911 call, not one time did he mention that he's got young children at home. You know, he tells that crazy story about, you know, his wife being murdered by Juan and him being kidnapped and driving around for 16 hours and all that. Never once does he say, hey, man, send the cops to my house and my kids, you know, never once. Matter of fact, through all of this, I don't think he's asked about them yet. So that whole concern for his children, right out the window. The guy never cried and never asked any questions about those little boys.
Karen Stark, we need a shrink big time. I mean, the first thing I think of in the morning is, where are the twins? What are the twins doing? Are the twins asleep all during the day? Are they okay? How did their tests go? How did this blah, 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 blah? If I'm remotely in the area, I swing by to, you know, just very innocently spy on them. If my wife had been murdered, my spouse had been murdered, my paramount concern would be, what about my children? Are they okay?
But Nancy, you have authentic feelings. So of course you would be thinking about the twins. You'd be concerned about your mother. This is somebody who can't feel that way. He has no empathy. So all he's concerned about is, can he stick to his story? If you hear the way he sounded on the 911 call, his voice was totally flat. There's no emotion. He didn't even fake emotion. So he cannot feel. Therefore, he's not worried about his children at all.
You know what? Speaking of the 911 call, let's take a little listen to that again.
911 emergency, this is Crystal.
Yeah, my wife's dead.
Okay, so where exactly is she?
They took her.
Who took her?
The guy broke into my house. He drove me here. He had a friend. They just gone. They've gone in a pickup truck.
Okay, so your wife is dead.
She's dead.
Okay, did they, she they killed, in the house they, and then they took they, her corpse?
Yeah, they killed her yesterday.
They killed her yesterday.
Yeah, we've been driving in New Park Beach.
You know, you are hearing a 911 call placed by a multimillionaire, a real estate investor. You know, with all that education, all that acumen, all that money, you'd think he could do a little bit better on the 911 call. So what do we know about their relationship? Listen.
The Chadwicks lived a very suburban life. Peter was very quiet, very soft-spoken, QC. She was bubbly and vivacious.
When you say bubbly and vivacious, did she have a sense of humor?
She was very funny, yes. And so smart and talented, she could do anything. Our kids started the same school as her children. They were all friends. You see, she came from Malaysia, not speaking English, and she met Peter in school, she told us. Peter would work out of the home, managing the family investments. You know, they lived well.
So from the outside, did it seem like the Chadwicks had this idyllic life?
Yes, from the outside, it definitely seemed that way.
You're hearing our friend Tracy Smith at CBS, and there's more.
Peter came from a wealthy family. He was born in Britain and had dual citizenship. QC's family was also affluent. They met at Arizona State University.
Did you get the sense that she was very in love with him?
Yes, that she was in love with him and that she depended on him also.
What do you mean depended on him?
QC found our country to be a bit new and strange, different from where she had come from, and she was learning about how to do things here.
Did you get the sense that Peter liked her depending on him?
Yes. Yeah, we definitely all felt that he was completely comfortable with that. She was definitely less independent than many of her friends.
You're hearing our friend Tracy Smith over at CBS. That was the family dynamic. Dave Mack.
So many times we think we know what a married couple is like, what their family life is like, because of the image that they project to others. The image that this family had was that they weren't show-offs, but they had money. You know, Chadwick worked at home managing and working with his company's real estate company. She was a stay-at-home mom. They had three boys. One, the oldest, I think, was 14 at the time this happened. He was away at boarding school, while the two younger boys were 12 and 9, and they attended a fairly exclusive private school in Orange County. Beyond that, inside the home, it was meticulous, very organized. She ran an incredible home. And you could, if you look at the pictures of the boys, they're always smiling. These boys were, they knew their mom loved them. And I think about that when I realize what this Chadwick did to his family. He took this mother, this loving mom, who did everything she could for her boys, and he stole her from them. But beyond that, the guy never once asked about the boys. He never checked on, you know, think about it. They, through all of this, I don't think he's asked about them yet. And he's left them without the mother that they loved, and he left them destitute. This guy, I'm so thankful he's caught. I'm just ready for the trial. I'm ready for him to be put under the jail. This is a guy who doesn't deserve to share the same oxygen that we breathe.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Queen Chadwick, she's dead. And for 4 long years, 4 years, The prime suspect has been nowhere to be found. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. Thank you for being with us. How awful to steal a mother away from her children. In the last hours, a major, major break in the case of the murder of QC Quee Chadwick. Take a listen to our friends at Inside Edition.
A fugitive multimillionaire accused of killing his wife, nabbed after nearly 5 years on the run. What happened to the accused wife killer? An international manhunt was launched. Chadwick was added to the U.S. Marshals' most wanted list. The 54-year-old tycoon was returned to the U.S. from Mexico after authorities received a crucial tip.
Cops do it all. They check cell phone records. They check everything regarding social media, computers, cameras in the neighborhood, everything. And they still can't find QC or her body. What, she just disappears off the face of the earth until a tip.
We started finding QC's items. We found nice bags. We found a really nice purse. So we set those aside. When we opened up the bag, that's when we found QC's ID, her permanent residency card, $10,000 cash. And all of this stuff is the stuff that he described Juan taking with QC's body into Mexico.
And wrapped in that green blanket, QC's body.
It was a huge break for us. The dumpster was scheduled to be picked up the Thursday morning, which was the next morning after we believe Peter disposed of QC's body. The issue with that was there was some kind of billing dispute.
So they were supposed to pick up the dumpster, but they didn't.
Once detectives finally found QC, the medical examiner was able to determine how she died.
There was a pretty violent struggle, which resulted in strangulation and possible drowning.
Wow. So how could they determine from that to Dr. Chris Sperry, chief medical examiner, that there had been a possible drowning?
I think that's based on the scene evidence back at the house where there's a deep bathtub, a hot tub, and with a broken vase and some blood and the evidence of a struggle around that area. Drowning is a diagnosis of exclusion. It's very difficult from a pathology view to actually establish that someone has truly drowned. But strangulation injuries should be very straightforward and fairly easy to detect with a good autopsy. So I think the medical examiner was basically covering all bases, knowing that there was a struggle, you know, in and around a tub at the home with broken, broken vase and other evidence. So that was added on as a, I would say, a backup in a sense to indicate that drowning may have occurred. And if so, that would place probably QC back at the house.
So let me understand, Dave Mack, syndicated talk show host, her body is found wrapped inside of a green blanket. Do we know where the blanket came from and where exactly was her body found?
The blanket apparently came from inside the home, Nancy, and her body was actually found in that dumpster, as was described a little while ago, that was supposed to have already been taken to the dump. But due to a billing dispute, it was actually still there with the body intact.
If you think the 911 call was bizarre, listen to this.
Peter Chadwick's explanation of QC's death has always been problematic. The story changes often and the details are bizarre. For example, when asked to describe the knife that Juan used to threaten him during their 16-hour-long ordeal, Peter describes a small Swiss Army utility knife with a blade 2 inches long, and he points out that the knife blade was very dull. His demeanor is also peculiar, as recorded in a detective's report.
I noticed that Peter appeared unemotional and almost sleepy throughout our contact. He spoke very quietly and with a British accent. Peter was very slow to answer my questions and would take frequent long pauses during his answers. He frequently put his hands over his face as if he was going to cry. But when he removed his hands, he did not appear emotional. His eyes were not red and or watery.
In one version of the Juan story, the killer sits on Peter's chest for a solid 5 minutes so that he can't attempt CPR on his dying wife. In another, Juan forces Peter to disrobe after QC is dead. Peter then tries to charge at Juan, but Juan grabs his testicles and squeezes them to subdue him.
Okay, that's from our friends at Countdown to Capture. Karen Stark with a guy's story. How does it always boil down to his testicles? Something to do with his testicles, his penis, his sex life. Here we go. First of all, the guy sits on him. Okay, while his wife is dying, he's subdued because Juan sits on him. Then he grabs his testicles. You know, it never ends with this guy, Karen Stark. What is this telling you? And also, Karen, while I've got you, What about the fact that he appears like he's about to fall asleep while cops are trying to talk to him about his wife's murder?
Well, there's that lack of emotion again, Nancy, where, you know, he could care less. So he's trying to act as though this is important to him, that it killed him, that he's putting his hands over his face. But meanwhile, he's falling asleep. He's boring himself. And his story is unusual for a psychopath. And the reason I'm saying that is that they're usually very planned and exact, and they know exactly what they're going to say. Even if you and I don't think it'll make sense, they've worked it out. This guy hasn't worked it out at all. So his story becomes very involved, and all of a sudden his manhood comes to question, and they're restraining him. And what's the worst way? It's grabbing testicles, right, to a man.
Joining me right now, CrimeOnline.com investigative reporter Dave Mack. Dave Mack, what more can you tell me?
A couple of things that we found out during the investigation in this is while Chadwick was on the lam for 4 years, the Newport Beach Police Department never gave up on it. They kept this front and center. They actually were very aggressive digitally in trying to keep the guy's picture out there, his story out. They wanted people to know this guy was on the lam and was trying to avoid justice. Once he did get to a place where he could stay under the radar, he moved around a lot. He probably had to change his name a lot. He had to constantly be working on a new backstory and new fake IDs, and was able to accomplish that for a number of years. But eventually it led to the tips that came in by the Newport Beach Police Department, keeping it front and center digitally by, you know, aggressively going after him with using a podcast and things like that. That's how they got the tip to where he was in Mexico. It was just good old-fashioned police work, seeking out information from the public and the public responding. And they were able to follow up on it, and boom, they got him.
Nancy Grace, Crime Stories, signing off. Goodbye, friend.